Gang, we all know that a premium Spotify subscription gives you access to millions of songs and thousands of podcasts, but did you know that a premium Spotify subscription also gets you access to tons of audiobooks for free? It does, gang. Listen to great books like Storyteller, the Dave Grohl memoir, or Life by Keith Richards, or The Woman in Me by Britney Spears. Listen, there's all kinds of books on there. There's fiction, nonfiction, self-help, anything you're looking for, man, they got it, and you can listen to it for free. Just go to Spotify.com or download Spotify from your app store and start listening today. That's Spotify. Millions of songs, thousands of podcasts, and now audiobooks available with your premium subscription. Spotify.com. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend. As you can tell, I'm sick. I tested positive for COVID on Sunday morning when I woke up. I had chills. I was sick. I wasn't feeling great at my gig on Saturday night, but thought it was just allergies. And when I woke up on Sunday, I tested because I had the chills and all that shit. But anyway, yeah, I'm sick. I got a lot of moving stuff to do. I have a lot of podcasts this week. Got a lot of releases this week and next week. Putting out three shows this week and three shows next week. So I had to make sure that all of these shows come out in a timely fashion. So I'm cutting this intro short so I can just get to the show. I hope you guys all had a good weekend. I hope you have a good rest of the week. We do have three shows, and hopefully I'll be feeling better as the week goes on and I'll come back to life. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. Voice, piano, and guitar teacher G-Fire is releasing her first release in 15 years. This is an EP called Choosing My Own Colors that comes out on Thursday, May 9th. And she is celebrating with a release show at the O4 Center on that same day, Thursday, May 9th at 7 p.m. She'll have special guest Aaron Ivey opening for her. This record was mixed by the great Stuart Sullivan and mastered by Mark Hallman. Produced and recorded by G-Fire herself in her studio. She'll be releasing it on vinyl and on CD. You can go to gfiremusic.com to get vinyl and to get tickets to the show. Anyway, G-Fire called me a few months ago and invited me out to sing on this record. And I did some backing vocals. I wouldn't necessarily call it singing, and my voice is kind of disguised. But she did have some other cats that I'm friends with on the show. The great Chris Gebhard is on the on the record, and also Warren Hood is on the record, and Courtney Audain is on the record. Now, I know that last year the city put out their live music fund grant where they were giving out $10,000 to people, and G-Fire and many other people. Like, they're starting to cut, like the releases are starting to come out now. So this is one of those. G-Fire applied for the city's live music fund grant and got one and made this record and put it out. This is her first record, as I said, in 15 years. G-Fire is a very talented voice, piano, and guitar teacher. She also does yoga for voice. She has a podcast, Women in Music, Women in Music with G-Fire podcast, great podcast. And yeah, her record, Choosing My Own Colors, drops next Thursday, May 9th. And her show at the O4 Center. Get some tickets, man. Go to gfiremusic.com for all of your G-Fire music needs. Get some Folktronica music. And please enjoy my conversation with G-Fire. Let's get down. So you went to an Eclipse wedding?
Yeah, I did. My hair stylist got married to her love, and it was great. It was really small, maybe 30 people or something. We all experienced the eclipse and the wedding together.
Oh, that's great. That sounds
fun. Yeah, it was It was really fun. You know, I'm vegan. They're vegan, so all the food was vegan. I don't drink, but they had an open bar, and you know, we played trivia after the wedding.
Sounds pretty crazy.
It was great. Unlike any other wedding I've been to, and it was really kind of Austin-ish, you know.
Yeah,
it's at a place called the Secret Garden, and it's really secret. It's in a neighborhood with a bunch of different houses, and you'd really have to know it was there to know it was there. And they had like old cars you could take poses with, and a moon, and which was appropriate for the occasion. And there was an old piano that didn't work at all, but it was just there, so we took a picture with that.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was totally cool.
So, dude, this album, Choosing My Own Colors, when does it come out on streaming services? On the 9th, on May 9th, same day as the show?
Yes, on May 9th itself. So I decided to just make everything come out. Hopefully you got all the tracks. I sent you a Dropbox.
Yeah, there's 5 songs, right?
Yeah.
So I noticed they're all color titled except for one.
Which one?
Goddess Is My Co-Pilot.
That's why I put Indigo Mix.
Okay.
I may not have sent that on the album.
No,
but,
it's on. I mean, but that's, it's kind of, but you know what I mean. That's not a color.
I know exactly what you mean.
I have distinct colors in the title.
Absolutely. And I just wanted that song on there so bad because it was just really timely for me. I do relate to connecting to a spirituality that's more feminine than masculine. It's just my way of connecting. And so it's the Indigo Mix, because Indigo, it's all based on like the chakra colors that I learned in Kundalini Yoga. I'm a Kundalini Yoga certified instructor. And Indigo is your 6th chakra, or, you know, your connection to the infinite, or, you know, your intuition, all that goes into your 6th chakra. So that's why it's Indigo Mix, because it's me communicating with the divine, basically.
Okay, cool. That's what that song is?
That's what it is. And specifically, I have like angel messages that come to me, but I want people to know that it doesn't have to be from angels. It could be however you connect to the infinite.
Sure.
So yeah, so I just threw Indigo Mix on there so that would be the color.
Yeah.
A little bit of cheating, but you know.
It's a little bit, but did you set out to make like, okay, so you haven't put out any music in 15 years, right? This is the first,
exactly,
the first release in 15 years. So I had a couple of questions. When I was listening to it, I was like, oh, she must have really, like, are you a pretty prolific writer where you had to go through like, you know, 300 songs to figure out what the top 5 were going to be? Or
no, I had about 20 songs that were just hanging out for the last decade or so. And I just picked the ones that were, I don't know, prime for picking, if you will. They were in a good enough form that I felt like they could go forward. Hopefully the city will keep giving me grants so I can keep putting out more music. Cause that was the main hurdle, was just not having the money to be able to.
But you have a whole studio
something
in your house.
I do. But I like having
recording there.
You're right. I mean, I probably should have 300 songs by now.
Well, no, I mean, like, do you really need another grant to do a record? Probably not.
Yeah, I mean, I would still have to pay Stuart because I like how he mixes, and you know, as far as mastering and stuff, I'd have to save up probably less than 10 grand. Well, I could still do it.
It's just interesting, and don't. I'm not trying to argue or get confrontational in any way, but it's interesting to that grant. I had Erica Shamley on the show and we talked about it. That grant is to help you basically teach a man to fish. Like hopefully by the next record, you would have learned how to finance the next record on your own without a grant. Like that's the point of the grant.
Okay. I can see that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've definitely learned a lot by doing the grant, but...
tell me, like, how much are there, like, okay, so there's a couple of things. You're putting out this record, and you had a bunch of really great people on the record, even guys I'm in a band. I didn't know until today that Chris Gebbard is on it, my bandmate in Skyrocket, who I love dearly. and Warren Hood, who's amazing, and a dear old friend of mine that I haven't heard from in forever, Courtney Audain.
Yeah, we actually put out an EP called Two Roses and a Thistle, and it had the original version of Red on there.
Uh-huh.
And so I just kind of, I remixed it basically for this album, and I used Courtney's vocals from, I guess, 2007.
Oh, that's cool.
So yeah, I haven't seen him in forever either.
Yeah, I haven't seen him in, I don't think I've seen Courtney Audain since the 90s. I mean, I can't remember seeing him in like the last 25 years.
I definitely saw him in 2007 because I went to his then studio and he was able to do some screaming for me. And then since I wanted more of an edge, I got Sheldon from Lucid Dementia to really scream. And that's who's the loudest on the screams on Red.
Right. And also congratulations on being able to convey my voice the way it actually sounds to me in my head.
It sounded great. And of
that
course,
was cool.
I used that.
It was cool to hear that.
Yeah. And I got to play with that sound tools thing, you know, where I, you know, just put us both down an octave and then Stuart kind of made it all wavy and stuff. So I was really happy with that.
Yeah, man, that's cool. So, all right. So what held you up? What kept you from releasing music for the last 15 years? What was the big hold up?
For me, it was the money. You know, I own this house, so I put most of my money back into the house. So everything, you know, my business is teaching, singing and piano and guitar and songwriting. And I just don't make that much extra to, you know, put into an album when I have to. I mean, I guess if I moved, I don't even know where I could move these days, that would cost less than my mortgages do. But it really was a monetary thing.
Like, it was a monetary thing, even though you have a studio.
Absolutely.
The studio is in your house and you recorded this album in your house.
Completely in my house. Yeah.
Okay. So you see how that's kind of like, I don't understand. Did you buy stuff with that money that you didn't have before?
No. Okay. I paid for the O4 Center where I'm doing the show, and I paid for the Hot Pink Vinyl. Those were big investments. You know, I've never played at the O4 Center before. I thought, well, shoot, they gave me this money. Let's do that. So half the money went to the O4 Center and making Pink Vinyl.
So in the O4 Center, you rent that place out?
Yeah, you just rent it. Oh. Or you can. Okay. I just did that because I haven't been playing since the pandemic. And,
Well, I'm in this band Happy Land, and we've been talking about, like, we're going to be releasing music over the next few months, and we've got a show on Monday, and then we don't have any shows until August. And we were talking about places that we'd like to sort of, like, do our first show back at, and O4 Center was one of them, but we were all scared that it was too big.
It's huge, and I, you know, it's going to be a small group that's coming to see me, you know, again, I haven't built up a big fan base over the last however many 4 years of basically being sequestered. I'm sure, you know, you've got probably a bigger fan base than I do. So maybe you could just approach the O4 Center and say, hey, I'd like to do this on a weeknight or something. They might just go ahead and give that to you.
Well, we don't want to play to an empty room. That's why we were like, we'd rather play at a smaller place that we know we can fill.
I guess I'll probably do that on the next album, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It was just... No, I'm just asking. I mean, I was like, wow, I didn't know how long it had been since you had played. And I was like, that's a pretty... Especially because I literally just had this conversation yesterday afternoon with the band. And so I was like, wow,
yeah.
She's got some guts.
Yeah, I'm going to play the crowd that's in the front. And I had just gone there for a couple of events, and I like the sound and I like the feel, and I like that, you know, since I teach, I have a lot of kids that might want to come see me.
Yeah.
So it's an all ages venue. Sure. So there was just a lot of factors.
It's also indoors. There's always that sort of like planning a big show outdoors and you get like a day like today, or just think of like, if you came from like Finland to see the eclipse yesterday and it was all
right. Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's really cool. So this show is Thursday, May 9th at the O4 Center. The show's at 7 p.m. You can go to G Fire Music for all of your ticketing needs. And you have the great Aaron Ivey, my dear friend, opening for you that night. That's pretty heavy too.
Yeah, I've known her for a while. We used to go to WIMPS, which was Women in Music with Women in Music Profession Society, where we would meet once a month and network with fellow musicians. So that's where I met Aaron Ivey. And I don't know, she's just a great girl, and I'm glad to be her friend. And
me too.
She's, you know, she's actually recovering from some major medical stuff, but she says she's ready to go and play, and she's going to join me on one of my songs and sing harmony. So yeah, it'll be a fun event.
Yeah. And so you're doing Hot Pink Vinyl as well?
Yeah. I mean, all this stuff is incredibly expensive. The O4 Center, the Hot Pink Vinyl. So that's really where the bulk of that money went. And then the rest was just to Stuart and to Mark Holman for mixing. And just, I mean, I got a photo shoot. I got the new website. So, you know, there's a lot of
Greeny photos. I love that guy's work, man.
Oh my God. It was so much fun. We were going to just have a 4-hour shoot. It turned into a 6-hour shoot. We got like so many great pictures. It was amazing.
That's awesome, man. It's so fun when you get to do that. He really did a great job. He's fantastic. I always freak out when I see his stuff. I'm a big fan of him.
You know, it's just one of those fortuitous, you know, synchronicity things. Cause I happened to see Juice Consulting, and they had promoted his show where he was focused on colors, and that was the only way I'd ever heard of him.
That's
and I
awesome.
Was like, wow, I'm doing colors. This would be perfect. And it was.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Have you ever, was it at Modern Rocks? Is that where his photo show was? I think it was.
Yeah, I don't think I actually went to the show. I just saw his work, and I just contacted him separately. And we shot in his, yeah.
Oh, sorry, go ahead. You shot where?
We shot in his studio. I mean, he had all these backgrounds and lighting and...
Oh, I bet, man.
You know, like I said, I bought all those costumes so that I would have like hot pink and yellow and all this bright stuff, except for the wedding dress, which is the color cover. I don't know if you saw that one, but...
Yeah, no, I saw that one. I was wondering what's going on with that. Is there some meaning behind it? Is it like...
It's just kind of this idea I had. I found this wedding dress at a thrift store for like $60 that just happened to fit me perfectly. And I thought, wow, we should like have the wedding dress with some Hershey's chocolate sauce. And so I bought these huge cans of Hershey's chocolate sauce, and they'd been sitting around my house for like 10, 12 years, you know, and I was just waiting for the right moment. And that was the last picture that we shot. My friend Chrissy actually came over and helped because Dave was taking the pictures and Chrissy was like tossing chocolate sauce all around me. So we started with like a little bit of chocolate sauce, and then we had like a little more, and then it was all around me, and then it was like above me on the screen in the back. It's just, you know, that was the last shoot that we did. And it was just an idea I had, you know, and white at least could symbolically be, you know, like goddess also communing with the,
chocolate
with the divine. Yeah, but chocolate is just like one of my food groups.
Yeah,
it was really just a fanciful idea that I was able to bring to life, me and Dave Creaney and Chrissy.
Nice. That's really cool.
And that's the album cover. I don't know if I sent you that one.
I didn't see the album cover, but isn't it on your website? You're wearing a okay.
Yeah, the first picture you see on the website is that wedding dress with a little bit of chocolate.
Right. So are you going to be performing with a band at the show, or
no?
You're
going to
have a belly dancer.
And a belly dancer.
Okay.
I haven't worked with her before, but she uses like LED lights. Her name is Mystica Fiora, and she just has a lot of cool props and stuff. So again, money went to pay her. You know, I'm just indulging myself basically on this. So she's going to dance on maybe half of the songs. But no, I just use tracks. And I play some piano on some of the songs as well.
Yeah.
It comes out of my DJ background.
Do you DJ?
Not anymore, but I was a rave DJ from like 1996 to 2004.
Oh, wow. Here in Austin?
Yeah, so that's here in Austin, and I did a show in Calgary. I did some stuff like in Dallas and Houston and San Antonio, mostly in Austin, but a couple of others. And then I sang with another like EDM band in San Francisco back in 98.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm kind of used to tracks. They kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm just a one girl band. I programmed most everything on the track, or I've recorded Chris Gebhardt or whoever. They're all on there. Yeah, I'm singing with tracks.
That's cool. I mean,
yeah,
that's kind of
yeah,
the, you know,
so,
have you ever done like a band, like a, because I'm not that familiar with your music. What I understand, though, is that it is pretty electronica. It's referred to as folktronica, but it's,
yeah,
it's pretty electronic bass. There's not a lot of organic stuff going on in the
right,
organic
did,
instruments
yeah,
with microphones.
I mean, you know, obviously Chris played like all the guitars, and
right,
Warren
sure,
played all the
sure,
fiddle.
But the
bulk of it
right, yeah,
is electronic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now you've always,
I'm just comfortable with that.
That's kind
What's
of
that?
Always, that's always been your leaning.
I would say it's evolved because, you know, when I did Triangle 15 years ago, plus, I did have a band that I recorded with, and I did have a band that I did the CD release party with. And that, in fact, I think Chris, I can't remember if he played at that or not. It's been a minute. So, yeah, I had a full band. We had a show at the former Rudemaya Coffee House and, you know, had about 100 people show up. It was a good thing, but then, you know, again, I paid all the band members to do it and paid for them in the studio. I paid for studio time. We went out to Dripping Springs. I forget the name of the place.
The Zone?
And The Zone. Yeah. So yeah. I recorded Triangle The Zone, and I had a real drummer, who used to run The Zone. I don't know if he's still there.
Pat Mansky.
Yeah. So
love,
he played drums
love,
on the album.
I love that dude.
Yeah. So he played drums on the album
him.
And also, what's that?
I love everything about that dude. Great engineer, great drummer, great dude.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he played. So yeah, I had a full band. I even had the G-Fire choir. I had two backup singers. So that was fun. So yeah, I did that whole band thing. But because I work by myself all the time, it just, I don't know, it just kind of merged my whole DJ / folk singer thing. I was like, well, this is what I'm doing now. It just happened organically.
Yeah. And so you haven't really played many shows since that?
No, I used to play, I was like the Austin coordinator for the gogirlsmusic.com folks. And I would put on a lot of shows like Women to Watch or just women's showcases. We used to do trophies sometimes during South by Southwest, or I would throw alternate showcases. I did a lot of showcases with just women artists on them up until the pandemic.
But you,
and I even had a...
And you were playing on them. That was the question was, have you been out playing?
Yes, I was. I was totally
okay.
Performing.
Okay.
Yes.
Up until the
so,
pandemic.
Yeah, I was... Until the pandemic, because I was going to do South by. I had the whole show booked, all different women artists, and they canceled it. And this is my first show post-pandemic. I just didn't get back into the loop until now. That's just, yeah. But before the pandemic, I was putting on a lot of women singer-songwriter shows.
Yeah. I think Chris got one of those grants as well.
Oh, really? What did he do on it?
I don't know. I don't know what, I mean, oh. I think he might be doing, I don't know what he's doing with it.
Okay.
I know his wife got
great.
One
I mean,
too. Sarah did, she put together a big show at the Devil's Backbone Tavern. Like she works with sort of like more indigenous musics of Texas and traditional
okay.
music people and like keep it like she has this accordion festival and stuff like that she does.
Well, that's cute. I mean, that's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. She was
very authentic.
You know, Texas Folk Life?
No, not really.
No, she ran that for a long time. That's kind of like how she's just very embedded in that sort of like traditional music of Texas thing, which is pretty cool. It's cool.
Yeah.
To know about
I mean,
it,
I met
know?
Her through. Yeah. No, I met Sarah through WIMPS as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And then it was like, I forget. I definitely met Chris before I met Sarah, but, you know, then they got married and everything.
So yeah, I know.
I knew both of them, and then now they have a child. Yeah, these are all great people.
Yeah. Yeah, you got some cool people. Brilliant. Warren's a great, how do you know Warren Hood?
Basically from doing Triangle. I just, you know, when I did Triangle, I used Warren on the fiddle, and I used Ian McLaughlin on the organ.
Just no shit. Wow.
Yeah. 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 So I got to, you know, basically it's always like a wish list for me. Like, oh, who would sound really great on this? And like, then you just call them and either they're yes or no. And I don't know. Warren said yes. Chris said yes. Ian McLaughlin said yes. You know, I paid them all. That was cool. I guess I didn't get as much traction off of Triangle as I thought I might, but, you know, that happens.
What were you hoping to get out of it?
I don't know. I guess maybe some higher paying gigs, maybe more touring, you know, more travel. And I don't know. You know, it was my first big album, and I didn't exactly know what I was doing as far as publicity, but, you know, I've been trying to learn since then.
Yeah.
You know, I got plays on hundreds of stations all over the world, and I got some great, feedback. You know, somebody compared me to Bjork, Kate Bush, and, Portishead in one thing. And I'm like, my three biggest influences, like that was like, oh, and Sandy Denny, my favorite folk singer. So yeah, they mentioned like all the people that I worship in some feedback. So yeah, that made me feel good. Yeah, I think, you know, again, I guess just having a house just feels like I have a responsibility to that more than I do to go touring. And then, I don't know, everything's gone up in price. You know, it has been sort of a like, oh, this is what I love and this is what I do to make money. And I got to make sure I'm making that money.
Yeah. And you do that, you do that by teaching, right? Teaching piano and guitar and voice.
And songwriting.
And songwriting. And you have how many students do you have per week?
I usually end up between 15 and 25-ish students per week, you know, just basically enough to keep going, you know. I hopefully I'll get some more, but that's been the flow since the pandemic.
With the pandemic, were you able to get more students like by moving over to Zoom and doing that stuff or was it, cause I have like friends of mine that I grew up with that weren't musicians that are like, dude, I called your friend Corey, from Skyrocket and got him to like, I've been taking bass lessons during, I decided I want to learn how to play bass during the pandemic, like that kind of stuff.
It seemed to even out. I got some more students that would do Zoom, and then I got some more students that opted out because they were used to coming over here. And, you know, at least in the beginning of the pandemic, I had nobody over here. And I'm still, like, super cautious, and I still mask up for my students and stuff. So I'm just really cautious. So I wouldn't say that it kind of evened out because I lost some students, and then I gained some.
Right. Well, that happens, man.
So yeah, yeah.
What are you hoping to do with this record? Like once the release show happens, do you know what you'd like to do next? Do you have the next step kind of like planned? Like, well, after that, I'm going to try and do this or whatever, make a video or I don't know, something.
Well, you know, I made a couple of homemade videos that I'm going to post up.
Oh, cool.
And yeah, and probably just start figuring out where to play regularly so I get back into the groove of performing, because now I have merch. I'll have all these hot pink vinyl records, so I better go out and play someplace. So that's just my general, like, okay, I guess it's time for me to start playing out again. I don't have any huge plans. At some point, a friend of mine in San Francisco is going to hopefully hook me up with a show or two there and maybe a class that I can do teaching yoga for the voice. And hopefully I can do that on a sort of break even, hopefully, thing. But, you know, I'm not going to start driving all over the country or anything. I just don't have the resources to do that. So probably more here in Texas and trying to do some more gigging.
That's, I mean, it's kind of That's the rule I've always followed, and it seems to work. Like when you play the game Risk, have you ever played that board game?
A long time ago.
Well, basically, you're trying to take over the world, right? You have armies.
Okay.
And so if you don't get like a stronghold on one continent, and you got like three armies in Australia, three armies in North America, you're not going to really do anything. But if you have a bunch of armies in one country, then you can move a bunch of armies into the next country and then move a bunch of armies into the next country, essentially like build up an audience here, build up an audience in Dallas, build up an audience in Oklahoma City. And then before you know it, you can tour to Chicago. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. I think we even had that conversation when you came over here, how like, you know, I'd love to play the West Coast, but it's just not a great setup, you know, to make your money back.
Well, yeah, and it's not, I mean, you're not really setting up an actual career step. You're just going to California to play some shows, and then hopefully someday you'll go back, but it doesn't really work unless you're going to keep on going back. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Yeah. So it's probably just going to be to go to San Francisco. I haven't done a show there since I played in 98. So that would be fun to just go there, do a show, do a workshop.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of this stuff too, like, you know, putting out records, it's what you expect. Like, if you know what I mean, that's if you're doing it because you love to make music and put music out, and you want to go play in San Francisco, and you've got friends there, and you can teach a class, and it's a way to go there for almost like a vacation where you don't spend any money. That's pretty fucking awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my plan. I don't have any huge touring plans.
Cool.
Gotta keep my studio going.
Yeah, man. Do you?
But I do after this. Oh,
no, go ahead.
I mean, I do plan to keep putting more stuff out because obviously I've got some songs in the can and I've been, you know, starting to write some new ones, you know, so get back into that putting out music, you know, playing around Texas situation.
Yeah.
That's kind of the overall goal at this point.
Yeah. Driving around.
I love
jamming for the people.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I do love creating music. It's what I always wanted to do. So even just doing it is fulfilling on an artistic level and, you know, connecting with even a small fan base.
Yeah.
That's really great.
How do you write? Do you write and record kind of at the same time? Like, do you use your recording equipment as an instrument while you're writing?
Not usually. I mean, usually I will either have a lyric idea or an idea on the piano, and then I kind of suss that out, and then it's like, well, how can I make this into electronic thing? And, you know, so I don't, my studio is, I usually start with either a lyric or a melodic or chord idea. And that's just going to be, if I'm driving down the road and I have an idea, I just pull over and do a note into my iPhone, and, you know, then I'll work on that later. And then I work a long time on my lyrics because that's just how I am. So usually it takes a while to just get the lyric perfect. And then I start adding other instruments and like, well, I guess Chris could play guitar. I could, you know, on a song I haven't released, I used this guy, John Hagen, that plays cello with
Love It.
Yeah. So he's on one of the songs. Yeah.
His dog was my dog's first best friend, Marlo.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Isn't that sweet?
Yeah, so he came here and jammed on this song, and I just, you know, wasn't ready enough to put on this album, so hopefully that one will be on the next one.
That's cool, man. You're already, like, one step into the next one.
Yeah, yeah, because it was nice. I was like, okay, how many songs does the Grammy Institute, you know, require for you to say it's an album? And they said 5. I'm like, great. Coffee quick.
Are you hoping to win a Grammy with this album?
Since it's Folktronica and they don't have a category for that, it's just going to fall into that indie rock category, and there's just way too much competition. So no.
Okay.
I doubt it. I mean, I'm a member, you know, I go to some of the events with the Recording Academy, but it seems like the people I know that have either been nominated or won Grammys seem to be in the, you know, more fringe categories, like Gina Chavez did the Latin Grammy, and Marcia Ball, you know, is blues. So it's easier to get some recognition in the smaller categories.
I'm not trying to be argumentative, but you realize that the Latin Grammys are so huge that they have their own Grammys, right?
Okay. I actually know very little about it.
Yeah, they have their own, it has their own section of the Grammys. Like, they have their own
show.
Yeah. It's a pretty big thing. It's a pretty big thing.
Okay.
But yeah, so, no, there's a lot of blues, a lot of folk people like Eliza Gilkison and folks like that that we know that get nominated for that kind of stuff. I just had Jesse Dayton, you know him? He was up for a blues Grammy this last year. But I mean, there's bands like why am I drawing a blank? Oh, Black Pumas was nominated for like a regular straight up like best something, right? Best band?
Yes, I think probably like alternative or something. I'd have to go back and look.
Yeah. So yeah.
It can be done.
What do you do? What's your, like in the Grammys, like what's your function? Like as a member, what do you do? What do you get from it? What's your contribution to it? What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, so far it's been pretty tangential. I've mostly used it as a networking tool. just to network with people and kind of stay in touch with people that are in the industry, mostly in this town, really. So you end up just forging friendships or other, you know, music industry stuff. But, you know, I mean, I get to vote.
Yeah.
I mean, I have a vote in the Grammy organization.
That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it is, you know, and, you know, if you go to the South by thing, take your picture with all these people that are from different countries or with the Grammy statue, or you get to just hang out with other members. It's been just networking for me. I haven't really, haven't booked any like Grammy gigs, like playing at one of those events. It'd be nice to do that at some point. You know, it's not a big deal in my life, but it feels like, maybe at some point I'll go to the ceremony, but again, all that money to go to the ceremony. It's a lot.
Yeah.
Mostly networking at this point.
Cool. Did you,
yeah.
They had a thing during South by Southwest?
They did, but I had to work until like 7:30. So by the time I would have gotten there, it'd be like 8:30 and the event ended at nine. So I was like, I guess I'm just a working girl today. So I was not able to go this year. I went last year and that was cool. I also got to see the Brooklyn Vegan had a great event last year as well with some nice indie rock bands. So I made it kind of a day last time. Didn't work out for me this year.
That happens, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, it's just, you know, being a one girl operation, you know, I'm in charge of a lot of stuff around here. So everything else has to kind of be second to, you know, my main stuff.
Yeah. How's the podcast going? Women in Music with G-Fire podcast.
I'm glad you asked. I just had Laurie Lewis. I just interviewed her. It'll come out in a couple months because I'm not as prolific as you are. So, and she's like been doing it for 50 years. She's like a bluegrass star and she's been nominated for multiple Grammys and she did a project with Linda Ronstadt and Maria Muldaur. So I just interviewed her on Sunday, which was exciting. And then, I got Deanne Renee coming up. She's a local singer-songwriter here, if you know her. And who else do I have coming up? I don't know. I get all these publicists just asking me if I want to interview their artists. Some people are in England. Some are in Canada. It's been fun. Again, it's just sort of like keeping connected to other women in the business, mostly.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. So you didn't get out and do much South by stuff this year?
I did nothing this year. I was so booked as a teacher and I didn't have a show and I just was like, I just did not participate this year. It just didn't feel like I had anything major to do other
like
than
a new record in 15 years.
Well,
nothing that big.
I guess you're right, but like during South, I was just like, you know, unfortunately, I've got some ankle problems and stuff like that, so it's actually hard for me to walk around, and so I have to like really pinpoint where I'm going and
I'm sorry,
that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's just like a medical thing where I really have to plan my South by. I can't just walk along like as if I didn't have any issues. So I have to actually plan a lot more.
No, you know what's funny? It's funny that you say that because to me, every time South by Southwest comes around, like if you were to say to me today, like I live on Riverside and 35, I can walk anywhere downtown. Like if you like, I won't walk to the Saxon Pub, but if you were like, hey, do you want to walk down to Continental Club? I'd be like, are you fucking crazy? But if we were walking down the street in New York and you said, hey, let's walk over to this place that's as far as here to Continental Club, I'd be like, sure. And we'd walk. And during South by Southwest, it's like, yeah, sure, let's walk down. But any other time of the year, I won't walk like 15 miles to do it. You know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
It's funny how walkable Austin all of a sudden comes up. Yeah. You know what? The parking. Like I played a gig during South by Southwest on Rainy Street, and it was half of the price of parking for me to go drop off my shit, drive home, Uber to the gig, and then Uber from the gig back to my house, get my car and go load out. It was half the price of parking. Parking was like, I think, $60 or something like that. It was a crazy amount of money for 4 hours where I was like, how do people function like in this, like with every, like if you were to go on a date with someone, you know what I mean? Like it's just $60 just to go, just to park your car at a place. Like how much money do you need to go out nowadays if you can't walk downtown?
Right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, fortunately again, I have a handicap sticker and everything so that I can park anywhere that's city parking for free.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, so that's one benefit. So yeah, I definitely utilize that.
Yeah, but then once you get down there, you can't walk around. You still have to try.
I can't, you know, yeah. I mean, I'm limited. I can walk certain distances, but I definitely have some limits.
What do you do yoga then for exercise and to keep yourself? Because you're a pretty fit person. I noticed when I saw you in person.
Well, I go to the gym usually 4 or 5 times a week for 30 minutes or so of cardio. So I use the elliptical and the bike and the treadmill because it's easier for me to exercise in the gym than it is like on hard surfaces outside of the gym. So I do that and I do yoga at home and I do some very light weights and physical therapy stuff at home as well.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So I do. I'm very into being fit.
Can you tell me a little bit about yoga for singing? And I'll preface this by saying that I took, in the year 2000, I went to my first heated yoga class. And I loved it. And I wanted to go 2 days later, but I had this gig in San Antonio and I was a little bit like, Jesus, man, I wonder if I should. Because the first time you go to one of those things, you're like, how does anyone do anything after this? You know what I mean? You just sweated like 18 gallons of water and you're just like completely depleted of everything. And when I went to that to that yoga class that day, I went that night to go play. And literally, I'd never had an easier time singing than that night. Ever.
Yeah, I've never done the hot yoga. Particularly because, you know, I've got limitations. Kundalini was pretty easy for me to modify. And there's a lot of breathing exercises, and I use two of them in my voice teaching. And one's called the Breath of Fire, which helps to build your endurance and your core, your diaphragm and everything. And the other's called the 1 minute breath, which helps you, you know, hold long notes, basically, as long as you want. So yeah. Those are the two Kundalini breathing exercises I do with my voice lessons. But no, I can't do hot yoga. That's
well, no, I didn't mean hot yoga. Green. I'm just talking about yoga for singers. I was using that. That was the only yoga I had taken and gone and sang after, but I sang it was so easy to sing afterwards. And it was, I was doing it almost in an addictive way because I was having such great nights.
Wow.
Singing.
That's great.
That, yeah, it was pretty amazing. But I've since dropped off. So what I was trying to get at is like, what kind of yoga exercises, like, is it a whole program that you have for singers?
No, I use those two breaths, and then I kind of combined some stuff that I did, and I just call it yoga for the voice. I even tried to trademark it, but it was a little too generic. I studied the science of singing in England, and they teach you a lot about the, excuse me, the resonating sinus cavities. So I use that in my teaching as well. And then I did study speech level singing out in California with Seth Riggs. So I use some of those sorts of things, although, you know, just I keep it pretty basic. I usually sing on the Italian vowels to warm up. I don't like singing on like other ugly English vowels. So, you know, I use different parts of, say, Kundalini yoga, science of singing, and speech level singing. And I just combine them into what works for me. And I try and, I have a tune-up that I do for myself, and then I try and create a tune-up for my student that makes sense for them.
Oh, so that's good. I've never actually heard that somebody tailors their program to the person and their needs. Seems a lot better.
Yeah.
When I took voice lessons, it was like from this opera singer. And even though I learned, you know, I learned shit that I, that has kept my voice for, you know, 35 years. You know what I mean?
I do.
Yeah, because I took it in 1989. But nothing. we didn't have a long thing because he was just disgusted. Like I drove him crazy. Like I smoked like crazy. I drank on stage, and he would be like, "Okay, so you can't do that." And then my response was always like, "Okay, so if I do that, what do I do to keep singing?" Like, I was just like, I'm not going to stop being like rock and roll. I just need to figure out how to sing around it, bro.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't want to admit it, but he did teach me how to sing around it.
Well, that's good. Yeah. I mean, you end up getting what you needed.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you still smoke and drink, right?
I mean, I vape since 2021, and I do drink when I sing.
Yeah, I mean, you know, because I'm kind of a rock and roll girl and everything, I've taught screamo singers, you know, how to scream more effectively and more in tune, some touring musicians in different bands, you know, people that smoke pot, I usually, you know, recommend that they smoke out of a bong instead of, you know, the harshness of just
a
joint. Yeah, because, you know, the water helps to cool it, and people that smoke pot are going to keep smoking pot. I don't even care. So if they're going to do it, you know, like, well, just use a bong.
That's interesting to know. Not that I smoke pot or anything, but.
Right.
What about vaping? Have you noticed? I did notice that when I quit smoking cigarettes and moved to vape, singing was easier again.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're going to have tobacco, I think vaping would be safer than just a regular cigarette as far as, you know, kind of making your voice scratchy or irritated.
Right.
I think, you know.
I feel like doing this podcast for like the last 13 years has aged my voice.
Really?
I do. Yeah. I noticed I'm talking from a different, like I went back to put out, like I do this From the Vault series, and I went back like 12 years and put one out. I sounded like a 5-year-old, but I was still like 43 years old. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
It wasn't like I was like 20 or something, but I was pretty shocked at how much my voice has aged.
I mean, part of it is just we age, everybody ages.
Yeah.
And you just have to figure out what works for you. I mean, when I interviewed Lori, like I said, on Sunday, she said she's had to drop some of her keys down, you know, cause she's in her 70s now. And even like, who was it that sang the national anthem? Was it Reba McEntire or somebody this year at the Super Bowl?
I don't know.
Whoever it was, I remember hearing her do it like whatever, 30, 40 years ago. And she definitely took it down a couple of the keys.
Oh yeah.
To sing. You know, because she was older and you want to just really rock the heck out of the national anthem if you're going to be doing it. So, you know, that's how some people do it. I always take at least one day off a week. You know, Thursday's my day off, so I don't do any singing exercises on Thursdays.
But you do singing exercises every day?
I would say 4 to 6 days a week usually, yeah. Because I trained as an opera singer.
Sure.
I started taking opera when I was like 13 or 14. You know, I took it all through college and, you know, I love opera, but I didn't, you know, I've got a small-ish voice. I don't have a huge opera voice. It's more suited to like folk singing, which is, you know, a big love of mine. So yeah. Yeah. But I studied it.
Yeah.
Sang a bunch of Mozart arias and some French stuff, German Lieder, you know, all the classical stuff.
That's awesome, man.
So yeah, I feel better when I do my exercise every day. It's just like I go in the gym, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if it's just for, yeah.
I don't do that. And I came back from the pandemic, like getting back and singing with a band. I had a whole year of like basically having to almost rehab my voice back into the strength that it had been for so long before, because even though I was singing and singing almost every day and doing live streams and, you know, doing that, I wasn't singing over a band.
Right. And that is different.
That is 100% different. And when you just sing, and then you go and try and sing over a band and you're like, holy shit, this is really hard to do. That, like, you know, that year off of doing that was really difficult on me.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, I haven't sung with a band in a long time. I've got my in-ear monitors that I use to have my tracks in my ear, and I have a little separate mixer so I can just mix that. So it's mostly vocals and I can just keep up with my tracks. So that's how I do on stage.
Do you find that people that use the in-ear monitors end up saving their voice over time because they're not having to scream over a band and hear themselves over a drummer?
I mean, I would say give it a shot, you know, and see if it helps.
Yeah, it's hard in this band Skyrocket because everybody, there's like 5 people singing. On okay. One microphone, like we all move to this lead singer position to do it. And one guy won't do wireless mics because that's the one way to solve it is if we each had our own mic, then when we move to the center place, we just take it. But he doesn't want wireless mics. He thinks they're stupid looking. It's a weird thing to do. We're all going to lose our voices and our hearing. And this guy's going to feel happy because he had a fucking wire on his mic.
Could you just set up one wired mic and then... the other four of y'all could do,
yeah,
you know, wireless.
I mean, I'm definitely thinking about, I'm seeing, you know, that now it's gotten to an affordability level where it's kind of ridiculous that a band like Skyrocket that does as well as we do is trashing our ears and voices like that for no reason.
Yeah. I mean, you know, cause like you said, I mean, we're just going to keep getting older and we want to keep doing this like Willie Nelson and stuff. So, you know, whatever you can do to create
That's another thing that when I was talking to Jesse Dayton the other day, he's my age and he is, he sees a finish line.
Okay.
He doesn't want to be 90 playing gigs.
Okay.
That's interesting, right? I was so shocked when I heard that from him because we've been friends for a long time. And I was like, you don't seem like a retiring guy to me. Like, it just doesn't seem like in your DNA. But he's like, no, man, I'm going to stop at some point. I don't know when it's going to be, but it's coming.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I never thought of that. I mean, you know, if my voice was shot, you know, I probably wouldn't go out and do as much stuff, but I'm trying to maintain it for a lifetime.
But nothing against him, but what's his name? The great songwriter. He passed away. He wrote Hallelujah.
John Prine?
No, wrote Hallelujah.
Oh, no. Hallelujah was Leonard Cohen.
Leonard Cohen. That guy didn't mind that his voice, he turned into Satan at one point. Like by the end of his thing, he sounded like the devil when he was singing.
But he never sounded good. If you listen to all of it, he just doesn't have a great voice, unfortunately.
I guess not. I kind of liked his voice, the way he kind of like talked through his songs, like Suzanne and stuff like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
I guess as a vocalist, I was like, well, he does a great job with what he was given.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And his songwriting.
Oh, no, go ahead. Your songwriting what?
His songwriting is phenomenal. I have a book of his lyrics that's just poetry. You know, just all Leonard Cohen lyrics. You're like, this is poetry. This is amazing.
Dude, a couple of years ago, I talked to this lady that wrote a book about him and his lyrics. I didn't know that much about him or his music. I didn't know his music very well. I'm like a too much of a pop and rock guy to go to like a guy like Leonard Cohen after a couple of songs. I'm like, yeah, I get it. He's great, but I don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, everybody likes different things. I'm just, you know, I love folk music. I just love it. In fact, I practice along with Sandy Denny, you know, at least once or twice a week just because she's my idol. I don't even know if you know who she is, but...
I know the name. I don't know her music.
Yeah, she's an English singer-songwriter who unfortunately passed away at 31 in 1978, but she just, she had this quality of singing that was ethereal.
Yeah.
You know, and so she's like my... having crossed over mentor in a way. So, so I like folk singers that sound pretty like she does. So it's hard for me to listen to old recordings of Suzanne. I thought that Leonard Cohen actually got more interesting when he was kind of doing more grovelly. I think he was chanting as a Buddhist and I think it helped his voice, you know? And, I did actually interview Julie Christensen on my podcast who sang backup with him for years.
Oh, really?
So I got a little insight into the behind the scenes with Leonard Cohen. He was a great guy.
Yeah.
But I felt like his singing kind of improved in later years. And I think it's the chanting he probably did.
It's interesting because there's a couple of different schools of it. There's like a school of like delivery. And then there's a school of like people who can sit like a Freddie Mercury, like He could deliver a song, but also he could sing the fuck out of anything. But then there's a guy like Lou Reed, who to me is equally as good of a singer as Freddie Mercury. Just he doesn't deal in gymnastics by any means. He sings one note or three notes and he delivers it like Alejandro Escovedo. Nothing against him. I think that guy's fucking brilliant. But I love his singing and his voice so much, but it's not, he's definitely not in the Freddie Mercury school. He's not going to be on American Idol anytime soon.
No. I mean, I love Alejandro. I haven't listened to the new album, but it's on my list of to-dos for the month. And then Lou Reed just put across his point. So really that does make them great singers because at the end of the day, we're telling stories. And so if you put that story across, you're a great singer.
Yeah.
No matter what instrument you use, whatever you were given.
Yeah.
Excuse me to tell the stories.
Yeah. Just like you were given this great instrument to tell the stories and Choosing My Own Colors, the new EP out Thursday, May 9th, gfiremusic.com. Get out there and find out when you can see her play on Thursday, May 9th at the O4 Center in Austin at 7 PM. Be part of the magic.
That would be great. It's going to be a magical show. I, like I said, I've got Aaron, I've got Mystica, I've got, you know, a bunch of cool songs to play.
I like that place.
It's family friendly.
Yeah, it is. It's a church, for crying out loud.
It's a reformed, I mean, converted church, but yeah, it is a church. I guess that's what I liked about it. It just felt like kind of centered and calm and had good sound, you know, pews.
I played there like in January or February. One of those months.
Okay.
It was really fun with some friends of mine, like in a songwriter round. And I really liked, that was the first time I'd ever played there.
Yeah. They got a big stage, you know.
Yeah.
If you want to buy a VIP ticket, you sit in the first couple of rows or whatever. They even have screens where I think they put the cover of your album up or something on the side.
Yeah. You know,
I
the first time I went there, the first time I went there, I got COVID.
Oh, shit.
I did. The second time I got COVID, I got it there. I know it was there. I know that. That's the only place I was with like 600 people hugging.
Wow, you had 600 people at your gig?
It wasn't my gig. I don't know how many people were there. I can't ever tell how many people. I just say giant numbers. But it was sold out.
I think it was 370.
It was Madame Radar. But what I was going to say is their show was sold out. And I went with one of my best friends, and they had a guy doing like these really cool like oil lights, like the Fillmore in the 60s or something. It was really awesome. Like the whole place looked like Alice in Wonderland or something. It was unbelievable looking. It was super, super cool.
That is cool. I wish, I guess I'll see him some other time. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. I don't know if you have to pay that guy separately out of the thing or what the deal is, but that was one of the coolest things I've seen in a long time.
And they do that for each show?
They didn't do it when I did that songwriter in the round. It might have just been like, for all I know, he might have been the Madame Radar people's guy. I don't know.
Okay. Well, anyway. It sounds cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Well, I wish you a lot of luck. I hope that you have a great, great show. And everyone get out there and go to gfiremusic.com. You can get this album, this EP on hot pink vinyl as well. So if someone doesn't go to the store, they can order the vinyl from your website and stuff, right?
Yeah, I still need to set that up, but yes.
Okay, awesome. Well, yeah. I guess this will be coming out like the week before the show. Is that cool?
That sounds great. Yeah, just let people know, like I said, all ages bring, I don't write kids' music or anything, but you know, if you got a kid that's interested in local Austin artists, bring them along.
Yeah. Yeah, and also your students will probably be there too, huh?
Yeah, I imagine some of them will show up. They want to make sure I'm still practicing.
Yeah. Well, good luck on everything. Congratulations on choosing My Own Colors and mixed by the great Stuart Sullivan, mastered by my mentor, Mark Hallman.
Yeah. And I really, really appreciate your having me on today, Johnny.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me on the record, too. By the
way,
I'm on the song Yellow, right? Yellow.
Yeah. Exactly. And Yeah. Johnny's singing backup on Yellow.
It's literally the sound of my actual voice. What you hear all the time is not normal. That what you hear on G5's record is the real sound of my voice.
It sounds great. It's perfect for the song.
I love it. All right, G5, congratulations. I'll let you know when all this stuff comes out, and talk to you soon.
All right, thanks so much.
All right.
Let's